A lively, educational, and issues-driven radio show designed to show another side of the story, to focus on and humanize crime victims, to enlighten and shine the spotlight on organizations and service providers, and to assist those who walk the path with us. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, and Delilah Jones, president of ImaginePublicity.com, joining you this evening, each and every Saturday evening, for our topics, our crime-related topics, and this evening is no different. We have a wonderful guest, a repeat guest for the second time this evening, and I will tell you a bit about her in just a minute. So I want to say hello, and hi, Delilah. Happy belated Valentine's Day. How are you?
Great. Thank you, Donna. It's really great to have our guests that come back again and are able to update us on what's going on with either with their cases, their organizations, and tonight is no exception. And I'm so pleased that this guest was able to return.
Yes, me too. And it's very nice to have a full faction of people from Southern California. So we appreciate that so much. So to get right to it, our guest is Yulie Alonzo Garza, who is the head of a nonprofit organization that she created, Mothers Men Against Gangs Coalition, in the Southern California Imperial Valley area, which is a couple hours south of San Diego. And tonight our topic is regarding gangs, because her family is the victim of a gang-related crime. And we did have her on 3 months after the crime, and believe me, Delilah and I were very impressed with what was accomplished in that short period of time, and I was just so impressed with her in so many ways. We wanted her to come back for an update, so we have a number of things to discuss this evening. So, Yulie, thank you for coming back with us. Welcome to Shattered Life. It's a pleasure to have you and your husband in the background who's listening.
Hi. Thank you for the invitation back into the show.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you. And, Yulie, I know you have such a huge community and a fan club there that's listening, but hopefully we always hope that we have new listeners. And for the benefit of those people, I thought it might be a good idea for you just to do a brief recap of the circumstances. Perhaps a little bit about the background of your son, who he was as a person, and maybe the circumstances of the crime and what happened as a starting point, okay?
Okay. Well, my son was only 17 years old, and he was a senior in high school, ready to transfer over to the college in North Dakota. And Maybell State to play football for the Comet. And one Saturday night, he decided to go out with his sister and his friends and ended up at the wrong place at the wrong time and was stabbed by a gang member and ended up losing his life on January 6th. And it was very, very loved by many in the community, not just his hometown of Raleigh, but all over the Imperial Valley, due to the fact that he was able to embrace and love everyone for, you know, what they were, regardless of their race, their ethnic background, the economic background, or even you know, sexual preference. He was advocating for kids all the time that were getting bullied, and we find that we represent many of the things that he represented while he was still alive through MAG mm-hmm. Coalition, Mothers and Men Against Gangs. Since the last show, mm-hmm. Delilah and Donna, we decided to add men because men are a central part of a child's life, of a young man's life, and we have many men who have been supporting us, so we decided to include them in our title because it also fits the acronym of Mothers and Against Gangs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that is so important, Yuli. I think, you know, men, a lot of times issues like this are had by women. It seems like, you know, domestic violence, human trafficking, a lot of women sort of get together for, you know, bringing a cause to the forefront. And it's always so good to see men get involved in a very, very active role. And I think this is probably an organization that needs the support of men, even more so than many others do.
Yeah, I yes. totally agree, Delilah. I was going to say the same exact thing because there isn't really a force behind. And then there are, with respect to, I know in our state of Connecticut, they have four like divorced fathers and trying to obtain custody of their children. But that's the only other organization that I can think of where there's a strong presence of men. And it's so important as role models too, right, Yuli, because there's so many broken families. And so can you tell us how has it been since you changed the name and you garnered men as part of this process? Has there been a lot more men joining and wanting to become part of the cause and taking the lead?
Well, actually, the reason that we did change the name is because there was men already involved, and we felt that it was important to include them and not send the wrong message that there wasn't men or fathers or, you know, other males that were supporting our effort. Many of them are from, you know, my husband's work at the Correctional Institute. Many of also are, you know, our fellow politicians in the community and, you know, fathers of the friends that my son, you know, made. And many of my friends from, you know, in the community that, you know, even though I named it Mothers Against Gangs when we initiated, they have actually said, you know, we're still going to help you, we're still going to be part of it. And we just made the decision to add, you know, the extra word and power, I feel, to the name in order for it to be inclusive of and representative of everyone who is part of the MAG Coalition.
Right. Well, I think that's tremendous, and I don't know if we were to do a search, maybe you're like the one of a handful across the nation. I'm not sure, but again, kudos to you and everyone. We applaud you for everything that you're doing with regard to that. Can you give us a little bit of an outline with regard to what happened after your son was killed and the circumstances up to, was the perpetrator caught, was the perpetrator charged, you know, and what happened and what did it feel like as a family member going through that process again, just so that we acquaint all our listeners?
We were very fortunate, unlike many of our family that, you know, POMC, the Parents of Murdered Children, we were very fortunate to have the several agencies start the investigation immediately, and I would say probably couldn't even sleep for 24 hours because they were in search of this young man, and I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that we are with the border of Mexico, and it would have been easy for him to escape and take refuge, you know, in another mm-hmm. country. But I have to give props and credit to all of the agencies that came together as soon as, you know, my son was assaulted and killed. all of Imperial County and federal agencies, state agencies, aided in making sure that they found him. And within, I would say, 24 to 48 hours, they were able to organize and capture the perpetrator. So my son passed away on a Sunday early morning hours, and the perpetrator was caught on Monday in the evening while we were holding the candlelight vigil in his memory.
Right. Wow. And just to make it clear for listeners, your son in no way, shape, or form ever was participating or had aspirations to be in a gang. It was wasn't it sort of a party, and he was in the wrong place at the wrong time type of scenario, correct?
Yes, that's correct. And I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, MAD Coalition has been able to garner so much support, because my son was an all-American kid that could have been easily the child of any of our neighbors and community members around the county, because he was, you know, a good student. He was a good athlete. And, you know, it just could have been anyone's child. And so many of our families, you know, that surround us and support us, take that into consideration, I believe, and, you know, realize that we can no longer ignore those that are, you know, at risk, you know, teenagers, because we never know when they'll cross our path.
Yes, yes, that's for sure. And maybe just to kind of paint the picture of the environment where you are, I know through another friend of ours, Rosie Lopez, that in your particular area has the highest unemployment in the nation. And I would imagine that it still remains the same, even, you know, I've known of this for the last 5 years. And even given that, I remember you saying in the last show that I wrote in our blog, it's the highest unemployment in the nation and the most generous. So what does that say about your community? And it's a very faith-based community as well.
You know, being the highest, you know, unemployment rate would probably signal to there being a lot of violence in our neighborhoods and this spot. And perhaps we do have some, but for the most part, we all feel, you know, that our children are doing well in this community, but we know that we need to create more opportunities like the cities and allow them to grow in different directions. And due to the unemployment rate, I think we limit ourselves to what possibilities our students, our kids can, you know, strive to. So many of, you know, the students, once they graduate from high school, they, you know, look for areas outside of our county for employment, for educational purposes, and other opportunities. We're lucky enough that many of them do return and get back to the community because they know that community has created them, you know, as a person. But, you know, recently it was an announcement about a big beef plant, a slaughterhouse here that, you know, has announced that they may close, you know, in a month and a half. And that would put an additional 1,300 people out of a job. And I can only imagine where, you know, that stress is going to go to the parents, and that stress ends up, you know, going towards the kids. And, you know, that's why I believe that MAD Coalition is so important as well, because when the kids, you know, the parents don't have, you know, the money to invest in putting them in activities such as baseball, softball, football, or even dance class or music classes, then perhaps through our organization we can sponsor them and help them, you know, get some opportunities for extracurricular activities.
Do you think that, you know, for especially like middle school, high school age kids, is there sort of an allure to become part of a gang? Is it sort of glamorized to these kids to where, you know, they think it's just the cool thing to do, And really they don't understand, because kids at that age don't understand the actual truth of it and the dangers behind it.
You know, I don't think that it's glamorized or, you know, so much that it's cool, because many of the kids actually don't participate that much in gangs and, you know, in our communities. But I think that the drug activity that happens within our community does make it more glamorous, because it's easy money. You know, there's no jobs, and so the easiest way to garner money is by dealing drugs. And, you know, I think that is the part that makes them, you know, turn to gangs, the easy money, the support. Parents are too busy working, so there's no time and there's no dedication to the home. And they look for that, you know, in a family, in the gang family. And, well, you know, when they don't have food at home and they, you know, the gang, you know, make it easier for them to make quick money, then it's kind of like a survival skill.
Yeah, isn't that a sad commentary that you'd have to join a gang in order to get some money just to even survive and eat? You know, I mean, really. But that is reality, and that's true. How you were just saying that it's not very prolific in terms of having a big gang culture in the Brawley area, but there is the drug culture. Can you just how about human trafficking? Is that also a force there as well?
You know, I can't speak to the knowledge
sure.
of what the, yeah, I wouldn't say what, I just know that it's not so much the gang culture, but the easy money through the drug trafficking that I see most of the students finding that survival skill. But I'm not sure, you know, whether or not that becomes, you know, the drive.
Well, your focus has been on so many positive things, you know, since this happened, and that's what we want to focus on as well. But you know what I was wondering as well? I think at that point when we talked to you, it was 3 months in, and you were in the process of doing trying to get nonprofit status. Can you give us an update on that?
Yes, we had a large board, and through different experiences throughout the year, we found that it was, you know, much more productive to have a smaller board. And, you know, the inexperience of holding the meetings, and now we're sharing information and getting trained in grants and also in how to, you know, do the articles of incorporation and our bylaws, and we're having our, you know, monthly meetings.
So you're still in the process of it.
Yeah, we have to turn in all the work. We turned in part of it, and it's just a long process to get the final clearance and stuff. You have to submit different papers and stuff, but we're getting different help from our community and guidance, so that has really helped in, you know, creating the nonprofit status. We, you know, you have to put in one paperwork at a time, and we've been doing that, and we hope that as soon as it does get cleared, we have even more support than what we do now.
Well, that's great, because you've had all that much, you know, longer, you know, an entire year. And, you know, in between, I just marvel at everything that you're doing, because we see the numerous activities that you're involved in and trying to navigate the criminal justice system as well. But what I wanted to kind of go back to the topic of gangs as well. And, you know, we were talking off air, Delilah and I, with regard to, you know, what have you learned? I mean, every day we learn something new with respect to the things that we're doing and the causes that we have. But with regard to that, I'm sure in your community now, you're looked at as someone as a primary resource with regard to this issue. And, you know, we were saying how maybe putting gang members in jail is not the most effective means. I mean, of course, we want this perpetrator punished,
But I don't know, what is your feeling now, having come through almost another year since we talked, with regard to gang and gang culture and the most effective means of prevention and education and that kind of thing?
You know, I think that our focus through MAG is on the prevention part. We are not focused on the rehabilitation of gang members. At this point, we are more focused on helping the kids stay active at a young age through our Letterman Jacket program. And through that, the kids do, you know, community service and bring their families along to complete their hours. So we have not been active in the rehabilitation part because we believe that there are programs out there that are doing it.
That
are doing that through probation and, you know, the corrections as well.
Mm-hmm.
Where, they have the direct contact. But what we do is catch the kids before they actually go in and
right.
their families. So that's where we're concentrating on and not the other, the other part.
Right, I see. That's even more. Can you explain the Letterman Jacket program that you just alluded to? What is that about?
Well, through MAG Coalition, we started different projects that would target our students or our age groups that are in the, you know, the danger of getting recruited into gangs. And so many of our students receive patches, academic patches, sports patches, for their participation in sports, extracurricular activities such as band and cheerleading and all the different sports that are, you know, your traditional sports. They get a letter, a varsity letter or an academic letter, and usually they're able to show those off on Letterman's jackets. But our Letterman's jackets are so expensive nowadays that many of the kids end up shelving their patches and their accomplishments rather than, you know, being able to display them with, you know, confidence and pride on their jackets and display that school pride. So in the fall, we did a pilot program where we had a donation from my brothers who have their own businesses, and we did a raffle. We created a raffle where the students would sell $5 raffle tickets, and they would get 80% of the profit. So for every $5 that they would sell, they would get $1. I mean, we would get $1, and they would get $4 towards their Letterman's jacket. We made a partnership with our local distributor, and he offered, you know, just go, and they offered to do a free patch for the kids with their school of graduation year. And, you know, they would sew on our community service patch for MAG Coalition for free. So it was the savings of about $30 for the kids when they, you know, got their Letterman's jackets sent to them. So the kids would sell these tickets and return them, you know, before the raffle was to happen. And what we would do is, in turn, write a check to the business, not to the students, but to the business, and put their name on the memo line so that they can order their jacket. And it was started off as a pilot program just to see, you know, if it was something that would garner interest and would garner, you know, participation from students. And what we found, we actually ended up recruiting many students who hadn't even thought about getting a Letterman's jacket and now, you know, have accomplished being able to pay half during the first semester, and some even paid for all of it through their sales. And we started it this semester once again with a different, you know, product to raffle. But now we, you know, we're recruiting more students. And what happens is that they have to complete 43 hours of community service, which we feel if your community is going to help you earn your jacket, then let's give back to the community that's donating that, you know, that money to that raffle. And, and the way that we're doing it through MAG Coalition is creating partnerships with different, you know, organizations and agencies and helping them, you know, with their programs, whether it's a Veterans Memorial or it's a barbecue fundraiser, or even just a historical event that the kids can learn from. So they get, you know, hours of service when they go and attend and help. And if they take their parents or they take a sibling that can help, then they get extra hours for each one of them. We have had families who have gone to help. And, you know, it's something that comes back from our family. You know, my husband and my children, we would always do community service as a family. And it would lead to a nice conversation during dinner or, you know, our drive back home and foster that serving, I would say, the love for serving, you know, the community in my children. Mm-hmm. And now we're doing it with the students and their families. And we found that
That's
it has
wonderful.
Become really successful because now not only do we have a Mad Coalition student from a high school, we have a Mad Coalition family that's attached to that student. You know, the parents are involved, their brothers and sisters come out, and now, you know, they're wanting to be part of Mad in a coalition.
Mm-hmm. And businesses in the community. Now, do they earn a badge for every different activity, almost like the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts, like you said, for the cheerleading, for the football, for whatever, or is it just a school badge? I was just trying to...
It is an organizational patch for Mad Coalition. So it's a
okay.
ribbon, a blue and gold ribbon, which we consider our heaven's colors. You know, the sky and the sun is, you know, representative of the of heaven, so those are the colors we use. Although it is also, yes, and it's also the colors for his school, but now that we are, you know, an organization, we want it to be considered, you know, something different so that it encompasses everyone. And this patch actually has a Mad Coalition on it, and they earn it. We call it the community service patch now, and they earn it once they have completed their 43 hours of community service.
Yeah. Well, that's true. You know, that's good for the resume, too.
Yeah,
you know?
So that's one thing that we use as a hook when we recruit these students in. We let them know that we will write, you know, letters of recommendation for their colleges, for their scholarships, as well as, you know, they can write, I know, our organization down as a reference for their resumes when they're looking for a job.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's tremendous. Now, how much does one of those jackets normally cost in the savings again? I don't know if I caught that.
You know,
when you said that.
Basic jacket with just the name, the letter, and the last name in the back will run you about $250. That's the basic. And it can range anywhere up to $400 depending on the different patches that are placed on the jacket and the accomplishments that the students have.
Wow. Well, I just think you have such a winning formula here. Did you conceive of this, or did you hear about it from another organization and want to do something similar to someone else? Because I think this is just a wonderful way to fundraise and to be involved in your community. Don't you agree, Delilah?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's so important.
I think you could take this and... You know, this could be done all across the nation. It's just, if you're a microcosm of a movement here, it's very, very exciting, you know.
It didn't come from any organization. It was something that, honestly, I feel like it was just came to me one night, and I feel like it was God sent to be able to help these kids.
Right.
And I put the idea as a pilot program. There, you know, there were some hits and misses on it, and we've made some adjustments for this semester. And what we're looking for is the support from the high schools and hoping that they help us just get the word out, not so much do all the work to help the students, but just help us recruit the students and help them earn the jacket, because it's a win-win situation for, you know, the school, the families, the students, the community, because they're able to get the community service from the students, and our organization, because that allows us to, you know, build a foundation of trust, or build a foundation of, you know, I would say being active in the community.
Right. Well, I totally agree, and maybe this is a good point to say, because then I want to get into some of the last hearing you attended and another topic. But how, you're doing well, very much on your own, but just in case other people would like to know more specifics about how to do that, maybe replicate in their area or to get involved with your group if they haven't. Number one, how do you donate? How do you get involved? What kind of contact information with regard to those activities? And we'll be sure to put it in that blog.
They can definitely email our organization at mycoalition@gmail.com, and we can help them out, in setting
okay.
it up. And
yeah.
you know how we ended up doing it. But it really has been, an amazing program for the families. The families can't stop talking about it, how it has helped them. The pressure of having that economic need is gone.
Mm-hmm.
There's another area where we have other students that are part of it. It's not so much the economic need, but the exposure to the different groups that we partner with. We have a partnership, with, Elks in the community, Kiwanis, the ACC Hall and the Imperial Valley Lowrider Club. And, so we have been creating different circles of, partnerships to expose these students to. So they're, getting exposed to different groups, different people, owners of businesses, lawyers, judges, teachers, and, just different members of our community through their community service. And
mm-hmm.
these kids are just like amazed. I would have never been able to do that had it not been for MAC Coalition. The parents reiterate that, they wish they could create these opportunities for their kids, but either one, they don't know how, or two,
mm-hmm.
they don't have the time, or three, some of them are absent parents. And so when you have absent parents, someone needs to step in and help these students and guide them.
Right. Well, it seems to me that you are creating a better quality of life for your entire community, and I so commend you for that. I think it's wonderful, and I can't say enough good about it, and just keep going. And that phrase that you like to always say, "Go big or go home," right?
Yes, we
don't
still use
that.
It actually. The Letterman Jacket program is called the Letterman Jacket Go Big or Go Home Fundraiser. That's what we call it. That's what we title it. And, we
that
feel
last
that.
Part again?
Yes?
I'm sorry, you didn't catch the last part. Say that last part again.
What we did is, instead of a fundraiser, we call it a fundraiser.
Yes. A fundraiser, okay.
Yeah.
Great. Just totally wonderful. Can I go back a little bit with regard to the nuts and bolts of what happened? I know, I'm sort of going backwards a little bit, but I did want us to talk about the originally we scheduled this show because we thought perhaps you were going to be having a court hearing that was going to be significant with regard to the outcome mm-hmm. of what would happen to the perpetrators. And as happens with many trials in the criminal justice system, you have had a number of postponements and continuances. Isn't that true, Yuli?
Yes, and
right?
I'll be honest, sometimes it's very stressful to just, show up to court and then have it be continued for one reason or the next. But
and how many times has that happened to you in the last year that you've had a court date and then they've dismissed it or continued it?
I'll be honest, I lost count.
You lost count because there's so many?
Yeah, there's at least two a month, maybe. Or
that many.
One to two a month at least. And, I understand that it's the process. I understand that, and I'm very patient because I believe in our, attorney, the district attorney that's handling it. She is definitely very informative and lets us know what's going on, so we're never in the dark. And, you know, I just know that he's in jail and he won't be, you know, causing any harm to anyone. So I'll just wait for the wheels of justice here on earth, you know, to turn. But ultimately, I know God is the one that's going to be in charge of that justice.
Right. But it's still, as you say, got to be very frustrating. And can you tell us about, you were sharing with me the other day, the last hearing that you had attended. Can you give us a little thumbnail sketch about what went on? And I know neither of us are attorneys, so we don't have to use that terminology. But what was the most significant thing that happened then? And maybe we can get into a little bit about the California gang enhancement, which is a pretty fascinating statute.
Well, what we ended up attending in August was a preliminary hearing. And through the preliminary hearing, we get to hear part of the evidence that, you know, is part of the case. It's through the detective, through the specialist in gang, you know, activity. And one of the things, one of the charges that the district attorney decided to make sure she attached and wanted to make sure that it stick was the gang enhancement due to the fact that this person was a known gang member, and we wanted to prove that in court. So through the preliminary hearing, we were able to succeed, and the outcome of the preliminary hearing stated that the gang, there was enough evidence in the gang, you know, in the preliminary to allow the gang enhancement to stay until trial. And so it's one of the charges that, you know, we were originally told about and that they would add. And unfortunately, you know, the defense attorney was trying to get it dismissed through the preliminary hearing, so that it wouldn't add years to his sentence once he is, you know, found guilty. God willing, he's found guilty. And once he's, you know, found guilty, then, you know, with the gang enhancement that is attached as a charge, would add years to the original sentence that is given.
Right. And with the, I mean, I was researching some of it this afternoon, and what I find out, and if this differs from what you know, please correct me, but I learned that if that gang enhancement provision or statute is enacted, that can count as one of the strikes for the three-strike law in California, which essentially is good. But the, if you wouldn't mind, the 2 points that I read about and that they say are part of the California Street Terrorism Prevention Act 186.22, which I guess is also known as the California STEP Act. And from what I could gather, there's a couple of main points. It said the participation in a gang. If it's a crime to participate and assist in any felony criminal conduct by a gang member, that's one type of charge you can have. And it said that the penalties can include 1 year in a county jail, or a felony sentence of 16 months, or 2 to 3 years in state prison. Okay, if you participate and assist with somebody that's doing a felonious act by a gang member. But then the other part of this California STEP Act was that anyone who commits a felony for the benefit of a gang will receive the mandatory prison sentence in addition and consecutive to the penalty received for the underlying felony, which could be an additional 2 to 15 years or 25 years to life in prison, even if you aren't a gang member or you weren't the party that was most directly responsible. I believe they gave an example of a woman, a young girl, was charged
She had a boyfriend that was a gang member, and she was present, and she, you know, she didn't do anything directly, but she can be charged under this. And the other information that I learned is that years ago, kind of like, remember West Side Story, the Sharks and the Jets? With the definition they gave was that, if the old-fashioned definition was that whenever you have three or four people that come together in a common area and participate in antisocial behavior, that used to be a definition of a gang. But from what I heard this afternoon, they said the definition of a gang is whatever a district attorney can prove and make a jury believe that's what they constitute as a gang. So I don't know. What kind of comment do you have about all that?
Are you talking to me or Delilah?
Yeah, if for either of you. Well, you lead.
Okay, I didn't hear whether you were talking to me directly or did I. Yes, what you just mentioned is pretty much what I have heard in court that, you know, could pretty much happen. And due to the fact that there was, you know, more than one member there that represented a gang, you know, I think that allowed the district attorney to be able to add the charge to the crime.
Mm-hmm. And did you tell me that your case might be a type of a test case or a precedent-setting case?
Well, one of the things that the defense attorney is trying to do is get the information from our victims and the people who are testifying, to get their information, to be able to contact them before it is lawfully it's needed.
Allowable.
So I believe that right now that, you know, they don't have to turn it in during pretrial or preliminary hearing. And ever since we started the motion to, you know, to this crime, you know, they've been fighting and trying to get the information from everyone who is a witness. And thankfully, our DA has been very good about defending, you know, the rights of the victim and the witnesses. But there isn't precedent yet that has allowed, you know, a defense attorney to obtain that information before it is required to be turned in.
Before it comes to trial.
Yes.
And so they keep bringing motions, and sometimes, from what I read, the defense attorneys can say that information is prejudicial to their client, or that sometimes the strategy, the best strategy for the defense to use in a case like this is that they try to limit the amount of information that comes into the trial. Does that seem like that could be occurring in your case?
I'm not sure. I'm going to be very honest. I'm not sure about that. I am just the only piece of information that I do remember our own, you know, DA stating is that we don't want to release the information of the victims or the witnesses before she has to officially hand them over.
Yeah.
So that's what she's fighting for and advocating.
Well, how many victims and how many witnesses are involved approximately?
Well, I'm not sure, and I'm going to be very honest because I don't have the case in front of me.
Right. But, I mean, with regard to how many people were at this party when it occurred, was it a large group?
There is a large group. I believe there's more than five, and you know, from both sites, not just one.
Uh-huh. So, and this occurred outside a house, is that right?
Excuse me?
Did this occur outside a home, in the yard?
Yes, outside of a home, in a yard.
In a yard.
I'm not sure exactly because I haven't heard all of the testimony,
but yeah. I believe it happened not in a house, but on the outskirts of it.
I see. And so the people that were at the house party came outside when this, or before this occurred, or did it, just to let people know, was it an altercation between your son and one other person, or were there other people standing outside?
I would rather not talk about that in order to not
That's fine.
Say the wrong information, because that right. is part of the preliminary hearing, and I don't remember exactly what they said.
Okay, well, that's fine. I respect that. It's just, you know, we're just trying to create the sequence, if you knew. But some of that, those details are yet to come out. So I can understand. Tell us from the standpoint of you and your husband and your daughter sitting there, you know, in this and going back each time. What does this feel like, and what do you have to conjure up to kind of be able to sit there and just be polite and not say anything? I mean, how are you dealing with this?
One day at a time, and I can't say that every day is a good day or every day is a bad day. We have our good days and we have our bad days, and, you know, we sometimes, at least from my perspective, sometimes I feel like it didn't happen. You don't want to believe that it happened, and then there's times where you know it did, and it just breaks you. Just this morning, you know, just thinking about coming on the show and thinking about Valentine's Day, where, you know,
right.
you love to take flowers and candy to all of his, I won't say girlfriends as in a girlfriend, but all his female friends that he had, and wanted to bring a smile to them, so he would take them chocolate or flowers. And so, you know, it was a very difficult day yesterday and today. And so, you know, I take it one day at a time. And I used to say that a lot before my son passed away, and I think those were just words that I would speak. And now, after this event, it has become a literal way of life.
Yeah.
Just waiting, praying, you know, thanking God that I woke up and asking for that strength to move on. And once I finish the day, thanking God for giving me the strength to finish the day and praying that he gives me another day the next day and the same strength to continue.
One day.
I think it's definitely something that's so common with families and victims of crime is that there is a new reality in your life. And, you know, as much as we'd like to turn back the clock and have things the way they used to be, we know that it's never going to be that way. So, you know, I commend you and your family for the fortitude and everything you've conjured up to get through each day and to take each day and do something positive, and especially with the, you know, with the coalition and all the work that you're doing, I think is probably the best therapy you could find. And
totally.
We just pray for peace every day.
Yeah. You also aren't you a school teacher?
Yes, I am, and I actually...
How do you fit it all in? Tell us, please.
You know what? People ask me every day, but I didn't work for a full year. After my son had passed, I didn't work for a full year, so therefore it was, you know, easy to set the foundation for my coalition. And now I have returned to work since. I started working on January 16th, and... You know,
oh, this year? You just returned
this year,
a month ago?
I just returned a month ago. But it's been in the substitute level where, you know, you want to see how, you know, everything turns out. And honestly, I feel that being able to come back and substitute in my own community has really brought me closer to my community, even though MAG has allowed that to happen with the organization. It seems like the kids know about it, and I don't know. It just makes me realize that I need to work harder as a teacher and smarter. Not so much harder, but just smarter and being able to approach kids while they're still in your classroom, and you're able to touch their lives and hopefully say something that will go deeper than just the, you know, the top layer.
Yeah. How old are the students that you teach?
Right now, mm-hmm. I have junior high kids, but I have the ability to be able to teach at the high school level as well. So I've had experience at both junior high and high school levels, and right now I'm dealing with the high school kids through the Learn and Jacket program, and through my mm-hmm. substituting, I'm able to see the junior high kids. And through both, I think I'm able to meet with a younger crowd in elementary.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. So it is a sense of comfort to get back into the classroom and to do that, but also to do your MAG activities. And I was just wondering also, how did you observe the 1 year anniversary on January 6th? Was it
on January 6th? We actually kicked off a piece. A peace vigil. We did a peace vigil in order for us to be able to send the message through our whole community that we need to unite as one, not just during, you know, a moment of trial, like when my son was killed, but also through the different activities in the community. So
mm-hmm.
We're going to have different activities throughout the whole year, which is, you know, through the peace vigil, and then we're doing a 173 mural, which will one message of peace with seven artists, and in 3 days they'll be able to create one mural in each of the cities in our community, which are seven cities in our community. That's another project.
A mural in each city? You mean in like in a public area? They're painting
yes.
a mural.
Yes, and it's about peace and unity, not about my son, but just about coming together for one cause, which is peace and being united. So that's one of the things that we did to initiate, you know, not only his anniversary, but also initiate, you know, a program throughout the county that would bring the whole county together.
And are they still being worked on now, or are the murals finished?
Oh, no. It's in the planning. We have recruited seven artists from each of the cities, one from each of the cities, and we're still working on finding the building where we're going to have it, you know, be done. And also working with all the different cities so that throughout the year we're able to do one in a different city. So that by the end of the school year, I mean, by the end of the year, we'll be able to have, you know, a number of murals completed.
Oh, wow, that's excellent. I hope you'll share all the photos and everything on Facebook or somehow.
Oh, yeah,
we
do all that through MAG Coalition website.
Yeah, well, that is very good. We've got about 6 minutes or so left of the show. Can you tell us first of all, what is one of your longer term goals that you'd like to accomplish that you haven't done so far?
Longer term goal is to definitely open a center for these kids to be, you know, be able to be part of. We have a Boys and Girls Club. We have a teen center. But we need something that's after hours because many of our parents are working, you know, up until 10, 11 o'clock at night. And many of these programs actually close at 5 or 7 o'clock at night. And so we're thinking about something in the long run, you know, just further, you know, in a few years to where we can have a program for those kids once they're done there and they still need a place, you know, to be active in. And, you know, they can come to the center.
Like an after-hours club or something,
like an
right?
after-hours, exactly. An after-hours area for the kids to congregate instead of, you know, being on the streets and causing mischief.
Right. So have you started to fundraise for that, I mean, for the long term?
I think that is something just in the far future or far close future, but we haven't done anything to do that. Our fundraising right now is based, you know, solely to help the kids with the Letterman's Jacket, to continue the scholarship programs that we started last year, to sponsor different, you know, extracurricular activities in our community, such as, like, we sponsored the or purchased tickets for students for the Broadway show that came to our town. We're sponsoring the Little League program that, you know, needing some help in remodeling, so we're going to give a donation to them. So our fundraising efforts go out and help others that are in need as well.
Mm-hmm. So not only do you need, do you get and you need help, personal, you know, labor, manpower, but you always accept monetary donations as well?
Yes, of course. We
Where
have a lot of in-kind
help. If they're interested in, or if they have an idea or some type of donation that they want to make?
Well, they could, you know, email us at mycoalition@gmail.com. They can send their donation to our P.O. Box, Mad Coalition, P.O. Box 1639, Raleigh, California, 92227. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we can arrange, you know, to make an arrangement to receive the gift.
For tax
deduction. Just mail it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Great. Delilah, I just wondered, do you have any other questions that you'd like to ask before we close out in a couple minutes?
Well, I think all my questions have been asked, and once again, you know, I'm so happy that Yuli has been able to come back and share with the viewers. I think, you know, this is a very, very important topic to discuss. I think we're seeing all over the country, not just in California, but all over the country now, where gangs and gang members are wreaking havoc on communities and children and schools and just, you know, everywhere. And, you know, we're in looking and being proactive like your organization is, I think, is definitely the way to go. Educate kids, to educate their families, and to give them something to do. And you're very, very successful in pulling that together for your area. And I just again, have to commend you for the work that you're doing, despite, you know, the tragedy that you've had to go through and continue to go through.
Yeah, that's
Thank
for
you,
sure.
Thank you for those kind comments.
Yeah, we're so proud of you. Can you just tell us in the last couple of minutes here, give us a comment about what your husband and your daughter are doing right now personally, and how they're, you know, are there any particular things that they're focusing in on and enjoying?
No, my husband and my daughter are, you know, often, you know, help out with the Mad Coalition, and of course, you know, my husband works and my daughter goes to school and has two jobs, and that keeps us all busy. So that we can be able to move on, you know, one day at a time.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I say, I can't say enough for everything that you're doing, and I hope that maybe in the future, once you have gone through the court trial process, and if you feel comfortable and you would like to come back and give us an update for the benefit of educating our audience in terms of if this is a precedent-setting case, and perhaps you will do even greater things. You know, I just see you doing great things beyond your community, because this is a microcosm, I think, of your ability, and I'm very, very proud of you. So, you know, that's what I have to say. And do you have any final parting words of inspiration that you'd like to impart to people before we say goodnight?
I just want to thank you, Donna, and Lady Justice, Donna.
Thank you.
And Delilah, for your program once again, and for reaching out and helping us as victims to be able to have a voice and a place to share with other victims and those that are supporting our efforts. And
mm-hmm.
I just want to let everyone know who's listening, you have a family with you, you have your children, and do positive things that will leave memories that will last a lifetime that no one can take away, not even through murder.
That's true, and that's such mm-hmm. a good thing. And please do remember that I will be writing a detailed blog tomorrow for you to try to showcase this information. And if anyone misses this live, it's always available on the archives. So with that, Yuli, we're going to say good night to you and yours. Wish
good night.
You the best of luck. I hope you will please keep in touch with us because I want to hear
I
from
will.
You. Okay, very, very good. And Delilah, thank you so much for what you do behind the scenes. And I'll talk to you both very soon, okay? So everyone,
God bless
good
you
evening,
both.
Please.
Good night.
Thank you. God bless you.
Good night.
And please go to DonnaGore.com and be sure to visit my website along with other shows that we have here. So good evening, everyone. God bless and be safe and be warm.